The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
There was an atmosphere of constant chasing. When will this
daily phone calls?
I couldn't say for certain daily, but I mean certainly very frequent, from private office to private office. Has this been delivered yet? Never any interest, as far as I recall, in whether, but only an interest in when.
So when you say private office to private office, you're saying private office of number 10?
Yes, I am.
From what you know, let's see if I can ask you this way. From what you know, what was the source of the pressure?
Well, I've said I think that the vector I was most conscious of was from number 10 private office.
So let's talk to Mark Paul now. Mark, just to remind people, I mean, this man was fired, wasn't he, for the unforgivable sin of failing to tell Keir Starmer that Peter Mandelson had failed the vetting procedure. Did he agree that that's what he did?
Well, he agreed that he didn't tell Keir Starmer about it. He didn't agree, and he directly contradicted Keir Starmer on the fact of whether or not he had to tell him about it. Now, look, I suppose, you know, you can get deep into the weeds of all of this about who told what, who, when, and what should have been told. But really, the most interesting thing to come out of Ollie Robbins' testimony this morning to the Foreign Affairs Select Committee in the House of Commons is that basically there was just this avalanche of pressure from Keir Starmer's office that they wanted to get this Peter Mandelson appointment over the line before Donald Trump took up his post as president. And there is a kind of a growing sense amongst MPs and both on the opposition benches, but also some in Labour, that basically Keir Starmer didn't really want to know and didn't really care what happened in the vetting. He just wanted this over the line and he wanted it sorted. And that's why Ollie Robbins got it sorted for him, because he knew that's what the Prime Minister wanted.
Mm-hmm. So as we've been saying here during the week, the answer was Peter Mandelson goes to America. I don't care how you get to that answer, but that's the answer that I want.
Yes, that seems to be the picture that he is creating. Now, Keir Starmer, I was in the House of Commons yesterday when Keir Starmer gave his speech before Ollie Robbins got his chance this morning. Keir Starmer got his speak in first yesterday, and he basically said, look, if I had been told that Peter Mandelson had failed vetting, I would never have sent him to Washington. But of course, Ollie Robinson has revealed this morning that the reason that Peter Mandelson failed vetting had nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein or any of that stuff. So it suggests that it was something to do with Peter Mandelson's business links, perhaps, or his international links. And all of those things were already known. And this is what it comes back to. And this is why Keir Starmer is under so much pressure in Westminster. Everybody from his side and from the opposite side politically say to him, look, you knew Peter Mandelson was a risk. You knew he had been sacked or forced to resign twice from Tony Blair's governments. You knew that he is somebody that had, you know, quite a controversial and sort of combative past. You knew he was a political risk. Yet you chose to appoint him anyway. You took a gamble and it's blown up in your face. And now Keir Starmer is dealing with the consequences of all of that.
So when we talk about the clients that were deemed to be risky, these are Chinese clients of Peter Mandelson's company.
Yes, this hasn't been stated at the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, but I suppose the rumblings in the corridors around Westminster is that Peter Mandelson at various stages had business links to China. He also had previously, a long time ago, business links to Russia that perhaps he was slow to end when Russia invaded Crimea in 2014, perhaps too slow to end it. That would be the political perception, and that these may have been the things that raised a red flag. Now, Ollie Robbins hasn't said this to the committee, but this is what's kind of floating around the ether in Westminster. But he's fighting back against Keir Starmer. He's directly contradicting the UK Prime Minister. And this is a man, I suppose, who was sore at being sacked last week. I mean, he's a very, very high profile and top civil servant in the British government. I mean, Irish officials would be familiar with Ollie Robbins because he was Theresa May's chief negotiator for Brexit, for example. So he's a kind of a big cheese in the UK civil service. And for him to be sacked on the spot, which is what he pretty much was last week, must be pretty gutting for him. And he's thrown punches this morning to try and fight his way back.
And you mentioned the statement that Keir Starmer made in the House of Commons yesterday. And I was reading your piece this morning where you said at one stage there was an explosion of laughter. Anyone laughing on his own benches?
Occasionally they were. I mean, at one stage, Keir Starmer turned around and he said, his exact words were, look, I know you probably find some of these facts incredible. And there was an explosion of laughter right across the House because some of the MPs took that literally. They really did find this stuff not to be credible at all, to be incredible in its literal sense. I think when you're a prime minister of a country, and when you're under so much pressure and when you're being laughed at in the House of Commons, that must be a very, very difficult spot for Keir Starmer to be in, and possibly not a great spot for him. But they've got elections coming up, and a lot of people think he is holed below the waterline, and that his authority is draining away and that his premiership is effectively on the clock. I mean, he's fighting to keep it, but he's under real pressure, and Ollie Robbins and his testimony today just isn't helping matters for Keir Starmer.
Yeah, he's not coming from a strong place, though, is he, Mark? I mean, it's been pretty much a mess from the get-go with Labour in government, hasn't it?
It hasn't gone well for him. I mean, look, he hasn't been dealt a good hand. You know, Britain's economy is flat and relatively stagnant. Its public services are in trouble. There is just a general sense of unease politically, socially, even culturally, I would say, in Britain at the moment. That's what I detect, and that's what I detected over the last couple of years here. But still, Keir Starmer could have run it better. One of his problems is that there are no real Starmerites, as they call them. There are no real ideological bedfellows of Keir Starmer. He's almost like a blank page in a sense. And so it was kind of said to me at the beginning of his premiership by one of his somebody who knows him well. They said, look, they worried for him that if he got into trouble, that there would be nobody in the trenches to fight for him. And it's not like Jeremy Corbyn had his ideological acolytes. Tony Blair had his ideological acolytes, the Blairites. Starmer has none of that. And so when the chips are down, he's having to fight on his own. Morgan McSweeney was his shield. The protector Morgan McSweeney is now gone, and Keir Starmer is left fighting on his own.
Mm-hmm. Then we saw these pictures at the weekend, and I'd say it was no accident that we saw them of Angela Rayner and Andy Burnham having a chat and meeting up. And look, we can only guess what's going on there. Andy Burnham, of course, not a member of Parliament, but Angela Rayner is clearly on manoeuvres, isn't she?
She is. I mean, there are still a lot of people uncertain about as to whether or not she really does want to be prime minister, or whether she's angling for a very, very good and senior role with whoever is the next prime minister, if that indeed is another leader of the Labour Party, if Keir Starmer goes. Angela Rayner, you know, she's known to be very, very squeamish about the pressure and the scrutiny on her private affairs and her family. But look, she's kind of let it known to a lot of people in the Labour Party that if Wes Streeting, who is a kind of a Blairite on the right wing of the Labour Party, if he runs for the leadership, that she will run against him, and she will probably beat him in a vote of members. Andy Burnham, as you say, he's kind of the prince over the water, I guess, but who's locked out. He doesn't have a boat to reach your side at the moment. He needs to get back into Parliament. And there is a sense that he may get another chance later on in the year. Starmer blocked him earlier on in the year from coming back to Parliament. But he may not have the political strength to block him again.
And she, Angela Rayner, I was reading a piece, I think it was in the London Times a few weeks ago, is planning this sort of tour around England ahead of the local elections in May, where she will campaign for Labour, but in such a way that she'll be able to point at Keir Starmer if and when it goes wrong for him.
Yeah, she's been very, very clever. She calculates her interventions very, very carefully, whether it's on the campaign trail showing up for people, or whether it's giving speeches to, you know, very left-leaning factions within the Labour Party. She kind of criticizes Keir Starmer's administration with a slap of the back of her hand, and doesn't, you know, punch him on the nose, but you know, she's basically said that the government is running out of time. She said it needs to be more radical, and she's criticized its approach to a number of measures, and I suppose she's readying herself and steadying herself for if a vacancy comes, for being ready for it. Of course, she has her own problems. She still hasn't wrapped up her tax affairs with the revenue commissioners that forced her out of office, and that still remains a problem for her. So Angela Rayner, in one sense, kind of needs Keir Starmer to hang on for a while until she gets that sorted.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't know the timeline on when that decision will be made around her taxes, but he is going into those local elections very, very wounded. And the expectation is that Labour is not going to get a good result. Would you think that that will be the end for Keir Starmer in May?
A couple of weeks ago, everybody thought it would be the end. And then the Iran war broke out, and Keir Starmer, you know, he's quite good as a statesman. That is the perception of him. You know, he's become a little bit, he's taken more popular positions by, for example, criticising Donald Trump more. And that's something that he didn't do before. And it's very popular with the British electorate, with his own party. And he kept Britain out of the war, or at least initially, and that went down well. So there was this sense that maybe the statesman approach had saved him. But look, the elections are on May the 7th, and it's not just local elections in England. It's also parliamentary, devolved parliament elections in Scotland and Wales. And Keir Starmer is absolutely nailed on to be the Labour leader who lost Wales in the first in over a century, because Labour are going to get hammered in Wales. They're going to lose their fifth election in a row in Scotland. And in the local elections in England, I would say look at London. It's not just Reform and Nigel Farage battering them in the north of England. Look at London and look at the Green Party and Zach Polanski. That's where I think the real difficulty lies for Keir Starmer. If they start to lose London to the Greens, I think the Labour Party could start to lose its face completely in Keir Starmer.
It's fascinating. Mark, thanks so much. Mark Paul there from the Irish Times in London, bringing us up to speed with troubled times for Keir Starmer. Well,
the Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.